Throughout the ages, history has been altered by word of mouth and the misrepresentation of those who might not have been present when some of the world's most significant events took place. Channelers Barry and Connie Strom bring through the spirits of those who actually witnessed or took part in these historical events and lets them tell their stories in their own words. Welcome to Channeling History. And now, here are your hosts, Barry and Connie Strom.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to invite all of you and thank you for listening to Channeling History. We're the only show where we speak to the souls that made things happen. We're brought to you on the Parex Radio Network. I'm Barry Strom, your host, and I'll be doing the channeling tonight.
And I'm Connie Strom, your co-host. And I'd like to also like to thank you all for tuning in to our show. If you'd like to interact with us in the chat room, just go to Parex Radio Network and click chat. In our last show, we channeled Howard Hughes and his wife, Jean Peters. Hughes was a brilliant billionaire who became an eccentric and a recluse. I think you'll find the story of him and his wife very interesting. The video is available on our YouTube channel. The channel's in the name of Barry Strom, and at this point, he's got over 530 videos up. If you'd like to download the videos, just go to Podomatic.com and search Channeling History. Please tell your friends about us so we can continue to grow our audience. We'd like to get more history out there. Tonight, we're going to be channeling the spirit of Christopher Columbus, the explorer that was the first individual to explore the Caribbean area of North America.
Now, we're going to be discussing the brutality of the times, and especially the brutality towards the natives of the Caribbean. So I think a disclaimer is in order. The opinions or statements voiced on our show are the channeled words of the spirits and do not necessarily reflect our opinions, those of the Parex Network, or those of our sponsors. Now, before we channel, we always say a prayer of protection. So Connie is now going to say the prayer, and we'll begin to channel with our guest, Christopher Columbus, tonight.
God, please grant us your wisdom and protection. Grant us the knowledge that we can handle and keep us safe from all things that will harm us. Keep the messages positive and pure love. Keep us safe from our egos. We ask these things in the light of the seen, the unseen, and the honesty of God.
Okay, amen. Connie, this is going to be a really interesting show tonight. I know I learned a lot putting it together. So let's begin with Christopher Columbus.
Okay. Christopher, thank you so much for joining us. In the late 1400s, Spain was a united state. And how was it governed?
Connie, Spain was not a united state in the 1400s. There were basically city-states that the Catholic Church had given their blessings to. It was not united. That would come later. There was much dissension. There were many battles going on. The Muslims had controlled it. I know when I was young, Ferdinand and Isabella were trying to take the last of the Islamic facilities. There was much dissension. And they were quite primitive times. The Dark Ages had hurt the country. There was much thought about trying to explore, about trying to expand. Trade was very difficult because Spain was so far from Asia. There were many difficulties. There was much dissension, but the Catholic Church and the Pope had much control.
What was the status of slavery in Spain during this time?
In the late 1400s, slavery was accepted throughout Spain. When the Spanish army succeeded in capturing individuals, they were generally put into slavery. The slave trade from Africa was quite busy and profitable at the time. The Catholic Church condoned it through their different messages and decrees. So, slavery during the late 1400s was simply a way of life.
At that time, what role did the Catholic Church play in governing Spain?
The Catholic Church played a huge role. The Pope was very powerful. He would give individuals the blessings for rule. Isabel and Ferdinand were examples of it. The Catholic Church was the only Christian religion at the time in Spain, and the decrees of the Pope were not something you would argue with. The Church, in many ways, competed with the different facets of civilization. They had slaves. They helped wage wars. They were instrumental during the late 1400s in how the Spanish government proceeded.
Why did you want to find a water route to Asia?
The Ottoman Empire had expanded the limits of their powers, and they were very anti-Christian. The Silk Road was a very famous trading route that led from Europe to Asia. It had been used for hundreds of years, and the Ottomans closed it to Christians. We were being forced to find alternative routes. There were different schools of thought into how that a water route might be available to Asia. There were people that were trying to go around the Horn of Africa and go to India in that manner, but no one had ever done it. It was all theoretical. I felt that we would be able to head across the Atlantic Ocean. I knew that there was a strong possibility of failure, but my calculations had shown that we would be able to reach Asia simply by going to the Canary Islands and then continuing towards who knew what. But we knew that we had to do something to reestablish the trade routes.
Yeah. How profitable was the spice trade at that time?
Very profitable. For hundreds of years, people had made wealth by utilizing the trade routes. It was not only silk or spice, but there were many other types of objects that you would bring back. Trade to Asia was a very important part of the economy of the 1400s.
Why did you not just go around the Cape of Good Hope in Africa to get to Asia?
No one really knew how big Africa was. We had been trading with the countries of Northern Africa, and as I said, those countries generated a huge slave trade. But once you got into the southern part of the continent, it had not been accurately mapped, and no one knew exactly just how many miles it was around the continent of South Africa. And no one knew what laid between Asia and the southern point of South Africa. There were great unknowns. Keep in mind that we were the first to be doing this. Today, it seems very commonplace because you had wonderful maps and you understood exactly, you understand exactly how many miles it is to one place or another. You even have GPS to help guide you. We did not even have maps. We had maps of the known area of the world, but there were so many areas that were not explored. We were living in a time of great uncertainty. We knew we had to do things. We knew we had to expand. We were in competition with other countries. Portugal was very strong. England were competitors of ours. We had the Muslim countries trying to expand into Europe. There was much going on, and we needed a water route. Keep in mind the caravans could carry very limited quantities of materials, but the ships, even though they were very primitive by your standards, had the ability to carry large cargoes and to carry many people. So there were many reasons that we should try to expand trade through water transportation.
That makes sense. Did you have any clue that the Vikings had sailed to North America?
We had heard rumors. They did not fully understand what they had done. But there were stories of how the Vikings had traveled through the North Atlantic, how they had gone to areas that had never been gone before. And I realized that it was quite possible that the world was much different than what we realized. I had actually computed the miles that I thought it was to Asia, and I figured that we could reach the continent within approximately 2 to 3 months by water. I didn't realize such things as changing currents, wind direction, the huge storms that we ran into. There were much we didn't know. And yes, there was huge uncertainty when we set forth.
You're quite brave. Can you go into any more detail about the status of slave trade in the late 15th century?
Slave trading was simply a way of life in those days. Everyone, including the king, the queen, the pope, the bishops, they all owned slaves. Some of them had been captured in warfare, but some of them had been brought from North Africa. We were reaching a point that there were less slaves available. We needed to expand the base of where we could find more individuals that we could capture and put into slavery. Now, I know that sounds terrible to modern ears, but you have to look at things in the context of history. Things were so much different in the 15th century. Things were much more primitive. Warfare was different. Expectations. Ways of doing things. Modern morality points out truly that what we were doing was a terrible thing. But slavery had taken place since the time of the early Greeks, the Roman Empire, and Spain was part of the Roman Empire. slavery was very common during those days. By the 15th century, I would guess that slavery probably accounted for 20% of the population of Spain. It was just simply the way things were done in those times.
During that period, just how profitable was the African slave trade?
Extremely profitable. It was a way to make vast fortunes. The ships were huge. The conditions that they would put the slaves in was absolutely terrible. But they would load as many as 400 to 500 slaves in a single ship. It's sad, and it's a terrible thing. But as many as half of the slaves would die en route. There were many reasons. They weren't able to fight off the diseases of the Europeans. They were ill-fed. They were stuffed into these ships. But you could imagine the value of having 250 to 300 human beings available for sale. Mm. I know it sounds callous as I speak of this, but it was simply the way things were in these days.
Yeah, how big a role did the Catholic Church play in the slave trade?
They actually played a huge role. In the middle 1400s, the Pope made several decrees stating that it was acceptable to go into these foreign lands, take the foreign lands, and to enslave the people as part of it. There were multiple decrees where the Catholic Church actually encouraged going to these foreign countries, claiming them for Spain, and enslaving the individuals that lived there so that the Spanish colonists could come to the country, take over the wealth, and expand the power of Spain.
When you planned your voyages, were profits from the slave trade always in your calculations?
Yes. As I said, we had dictates from the church that allowed us to proclaim the lands for Spain and to basically enslave the people in those countries. So I always realized that if we went to countries and laid claim to them, that we would have to treat the natives accordingly.
At what age did you first go to sea?
I first went to sea at the age of 14 years. I traveled around Europe on ships. I learned navigation techniques. I learned trading. And I learned much that I needed to know to obtain the status that would allow me to plan such a journey. I got the concept of trying to open a water trade route to Asia, and I did pursue that, and I pursued it with countries other than Spain.
So is that where you got your education, or did you also get education from schools?
I had very minor education from schools. Most of what I knew was self-taught. I read books on navigation. I read books on many subjects. And it allowed me to advance to the point that I could converse with the king and queen and present my ideas for a water trading route to Asia.
Did you believe that the earth was flat?
No, I did not. I fully realized that the earth was round. The concept of a round earth was not unique. There were ancients that had figured out that the earth was indeed not flat. If I had thought for a moment that the earth was flat, I would have never tried to traverse such a journey.
Okay. Did you compute how far you thought it was to Asia?
Yes. The concept of longitude had been presented and I had studied. I felt that we were approximately 2,500 to 3,000 miles away from Asia. Of course, now you can see how wrong I was, but I figured that we could reach Asia in 2 to 3 months at sea. There were people that were scientific consultants to the king and queen that pointed out to them that I was in error as to the distances. They felt that the distance was 2 to 3 times greater than what I estimated. So there were indeed people that understood the shape of the earth and had the ability to make calculations. In retrospect, you can see that those individuals were much more accurate as to distances than I was.
Okay, you first submitted your plan for a voyage to the King of Portugal in 1884. Why was that proposal turned down?
The advisors to the King of Portugal thought that my plan would not work. They felt that the distance was so great that you would not be able to hold the provisions or to be able to make such a journey. So they advised him that my plan would not succeed, and he listened to them and turned me down.
I have to correct a mistake. I said 1884. It was not 1884. It was 1484. Okay. What changed that you received permission from Ferdinand and Isabella in 1492?
I was presenting my ideas to various countries. I was headed to Great Britain to speak to the king. Portugal was starting to accept the concept that perhaps I should try this. I think the main thing was with Ferdinand and Isabella that while I don't believe they had great faith in the beginning, they feared that I might just be correct and that it would be cheaper for them to finance my trip than take the chance that I would be correct and a country like Portugal or Great Britain would fund me and I would be able to claim vast wealth and lands for them. So I think that they just finally decided that it would be better to fund my journey than to take a chance that somebody else would do it.
How long did you think the first voyage was going to take?
I thought it would take 2 to 3 months. We provisioned at the Canary Islands for about 4 months' worth of journey, but I honestly felt it would be 2 to 3 months.
How long did it actually take?
A little over 2 months.
Did you think you reached Asia?
Absolutely. I had absolutely no clue that there were two whole continents between Europe and Asia. The concept that the land that we came to was a totally different continent was something of which I never conceived. When we arrived I realized that it was different, but I just simply thought that we had come to a previously unexplored area of Asia. I never conceived of the fact that we had discovered a new world.
Why did you think it was appropriate to enslave the natives?
In those days, that was the natural thing when you conquered a land. When we arrived, we proclaimed that Spain was now taking over these lands. Once we made that declaration, we needed the natives to work for us. We were looking for riches, and we had to reprovision our ships. Without the native labor, we had no idea how to proceed. It was a new land to us. We pressured the natives to tell us where they mined their gold. We pressured them to help us do what we needed to refit, to repair our ships. Keep in mind that after such a journey, our ships were damaged. We had been through storms. We needed food. We needed fresh water. There were many things we needed. We did not speak the language of the natives. So we took the natural route, which we had been empowered to do by the church and by the king and queen, to enslave the natives and force them to help us.
Hmm. What happened to the Santa Maria?
As we were exploring, we grounded the Santa Maria. We still had the Nina and the Pina. But keep in mind this. There was no other help available to us. We had the crew of the two ships, and we had individuals on those ships that could do different chores. But there was nowhere to turn. If there was a problem, we were thousands of miles from home, and we were thousands of miles from any assistance. So when we grounded the Santa Maria, it was very, very difficult.
Did you ever encounter any violent natives on your first voyage?
In the beginning, the natives were very curious. They thought that, well, they did not know what to think when they saw us. When we grounded the Santa Maria, we fired the cannons from the other ships, and they were amazed and had absolutely no idea. But they, in many instances, they thought we were gods. But we tried to indicate that we had the ability to create great force against them, which we did.
Okay, you left 39 men to establish a settlement in what is now Haiti. What happened to them?
They built a rough fort to protect themselves, and we took off to investigate the lands that were around. When we finally returned to them, we found the ruins of the fort. The natives had killed all of them. Apparently, they turned very brutal towards the natives, and the natives defended themselves. They tried to force them to show them where their gold deposits were. They raped the native women, and the natives simply reached a point where they did not take it any longer.
Yeah. How were you greeted when you returned to Spain?
We were greeted as heroes. So, sorry. We brought back gold. We brought back slaves. We informed the king and queen. We had claimed great lands for them and for Spain. And we were greeted as heroes. They realized that my plan had been as I had proposed, and they responded by funding a much larger expedition to return.
In September 1493, you made the second voyage with 17 ships and 1,500 men to establish permanent colonies. Did you think it was a new world or Asia?
No, I still thought it was Asia. But I did realize, I thought it was an area of Asia that we were not familiar with. I did tell them that there was a great opportunity for expansion. I told them of what I thought was incredible wealth through mineral deposits. And I told them that I thought there was an almost unlimited supply of natives that could help with the development of the colonies and would be available for supplying individuals for slave trade.
If it would have been Asia, how would you have had the right to establish colonies?
That's an interesting question. We knew when we left that we did not want to antagonize any of the existing countries that we use for slave or for trade. When we arrived in the New World, we realized that the Indian tribes were nothing or were not anyone who we were familiar with. We always thought, or I always thought, that it was Asia. Many of those that followed the different expeditions with me came to the conclusion that it was indeed a new world. As we spread out and investigated different areas with different ships, it started to become apparent that there was no silk, there were no spices as we recognized them, that everything was new.
What happened to the 1,500 individuals that you brought to establish the colonies?
Over half of them got sick and died. We did establish colonies throughout the area, small ones. Some of them survived. Many of them did not. The initial attempt at colonization was very, very difficult. You can conceive of a world where there is nowhere to go for assistance. They were caught in a situation where they had to rely on the natives, but the diseases that they brought with them were killing off the natives. They were treating the natives in a very difficult manner. They were alienating them. So the sources of information and help were going away. The early colonies were pretty much a lesson in self-defeating yourself. We destroyed the foundations that we needed to help us.
How did you treat the natives?
Sadly, I made many mistakes in how I treated the natives. We forced them to work in their mines so that we could have gold. We captured them and converted them into slaves. We forced them to abandon their entire ways of life. We infected them with illnesses that their immune systems could not handle. I personally made commands that I should not have made. I did things that were in line with the times, but as I returned to heaven, I was clearly informed about the many mistakes that I made.
How many natives did you end up shipping back as slaves?
I would think in our combined expeditions, we sent several thousand back. I know that many of them died at sea. But it was the expectations of the king and queen that we sent back enslaved individuals. And we did as was requested.
Did you ever find the location of their gold mines?
Yes. We forced them through torture and other means to disclose the locations. And then we forced them to work in those mines. And it was a very cruel environment. And many of them died working in those environments.
You made your third voyage in May of 1498. You were the first European to land on the continent of South America. Did you think you still were in Asia?
I was starting to have doubts, but I felt that if I maintained the attitude that we were in Asia, that it would be more conducive to the success of what I had originally planned. If I had told the king and queen that we had failed in making Asia, but there was this unknown land that we discovered, they would have been disappointed because I would have admitted that the riches of trading with Asia were not going to come to fruition.
When you returned to Hispaniola, you found the settlers in rebellion. Why were they rebelling, and how did you handle that?
They were starving. They had not been able to get to work with the natives at all. They'd been very cruel to them. The rules that we had them living under or attempting to live under, were not being followed. Leadership was not doing their role. They were in terrible conditions, and they were rebelling. Many wanted to simply go home, and we did not figure on using our ship capacities to return settlers. So they were in a state of rebellion. I used force to stop the rebellion. I reinstituted the rule of government that we came with. And in most instances, we controlled the rebellion.
In October 1500, you and your brother were put in chains and returned to Spain, where you spent 6 weeks in jail until you were released by Ferdinand. What happened?
The king and queen had appointed a new governor and sent him over. There were people that were trying to undermine me and my brother, and they had made up lies about how we treated the men and the natives. Ferdinand and Isabella thought that I'd gone too far and sent that new governor. And he tried to undermine me in any way that he could. He actually had me arrested and returned to Spain in chains. And when I arrived home, they actually put me in jail for 6 weeks. Ferdinand listened to what I had to say and believed my story, and I was released from jail.
Okay. In May of 1502, you made your fourth voyage, where you encountered a hurricane. How could you predict a hurricane was coming?
We had been in many bad storms in the Caribbean through the different trips. We did not have much warning, but you could see that everything was changing. The sky, you could feel the pressure was changing in the air. We immediately put our ships into a protected harbor area and survived a storm. There was a group of ships that did not listen to me, and they headed for Spain, and they were devastated by this hurricane. I could not have much advanced information about storms, but we would watch the cloud formations very closely. Once we got into the Caribbean, we started to understand that these bad storms that you now refer to as hurricanes were fairly common. The natives had more understanding, and they would often give us a couple days warning that they felt the storms were coming. But the weather could be very unpredictable.
Yeah, you were stranded in Jamaica, you and 230 or so of your men. How did you convince the natives to help you, and how were you rescued?
I had studied information about astronomical events. There was an eclipse that had been predicted, and when that eclipse occurred, I pretended that I had arranged it for the natives, and they believed that I was truly a god through that. I knew when we were stranded that we would need the natives on that island. So I did my best to treat them well. We did not show violence towards them because I realized that our future relied upon them. Yeah. So I actually convinced them to take me by canoe to one of the forts that we had established, and I was able to arrange the rescue of my men.
Did the conversion of natives to Christianity play any role in your explorations?
As I grew older, I did establish a stronger belief in God. The advancement of the Christian Catholic religion did become more important as time progressed. But in my early explorations, it did not play a role. Conversion to Christianity could only take place after colonization. In the beginning, we were explorers, and we did not have the facilities for colonization. The natives that we returned on the first trip were not returned as slaves. And we did seek to have them understand about God, but keep in mind that they had absolutely no understanding of Christianity. They had their own spiritual methodologies, but they had obviously never heard of the Christian faith.
What percentage would you say of these enslaved individuals that died of European diseases?
I would say as many as 60%. It was a very, very high percentage.
Did you ever receive any of the riches to which you thought you were entitled?
In the beginning, I was well rewarded. But as time went on and more individuals became involved, I was not, I did not have my agreements honored. If they had honored my agreements, I would have received a large percentage of the profits. As the profits grew, they became more aware that they wanted the returns for themselves. Keep in mind that the city-states were generally fighting with someone and protecting themselves. They needed the gold and the riches to pay for their everyday expenditures. It was a fact that I never received but a small share of what, of the riches that I brought to the country.
Did you ever accept the fact that you had not reached Asia but had discovered a new world?
Towards the end of my career, I started to accept the fact. I didn't admit it because I wanted the king and queen to think that we had opened the route to the great riches of Asia. The fact that we returned with gold helped convince them that we had reached an area of great wealth. But I always felt that if they realized that it was truly not the Asia of great riches, that I would have been penalized severely for it.
Did you ever order quotas of gold to be paid by the natives? And if you did, how did you punish those that could not make that quota?
I did not put quotas on the individual natives. Many of the natives that were enslaved were forced to work into the mines. They were not having any leeway in their actions and were forced to work terrible hours. There's no way that I could have put quotas on those people. But I did have individuals that were controlling certain areas that would put quotas on the natives to bring back so much gold. And if those natives failed to meet those quotas, some of the individuals that were in charge severely punished them. It served no purpose, and it was not something that I ever felt was practical to do.
How were you judged when you returned to heaven?
I was judged fairly harshly. Even though I opened colonization, the colonization that I opened created immense problems and literally depopulated the areas that we explored. I was demoted in several levels in heaven for what I did. Even though I followed the ways of the times, I did many things that I could have done with less cruelty, and I did many things that I could have done to help preserve the integrity of the natives of the New World. I was, as I said, judged harshly, and I created karmas. I have been back in several reincarnations since that time, and I have tried to repay some of the karmas. But I could have done much better with my life.
What are your greatest regrets in your life as Christopher Columbus?
My greatest regret is the treatment of the natives. We felt that since we were isolated from any help, we had to have an iron fist towards them. We felt that the king and queen wanted us to participate in taking slaves. I wish that I had not treated the natives as I did. I wish that I had made many decisions that were different. But I was following royal expectations. And as I said at the time, slavery was even encouraged by the church. So when you look at what I did in retrospect, I guess I could rationalize some of it, but there's nothing that you can hide when you return.
Okay, one of our listeners in the chat room would like to know what level you are in now in heaven.
I'm now in the third level.
Okay. What do you think when you see people tearing down your statues?
There are times that I am hurt by it, but there are also times when I think of the mistakes that I made, that they are simply entitled to do it as well. But as I said earlier, you have to look at what we did in the context of history of the time. The morals have changed so much through the years for the best. There is no more legalized slavery. People are treated as humans. But even the church authorized us to take slaves. So when the institution that leads moral authority is telling you that an act is acceptable, then there is little to dissuade you from following those acts. It is up to the individuals to respond, but those individuals need to understand the context of history.
Christopher, thank you for joining us and sharing your story with us. Do you have a closing message for our listeners?
Yes, I do. I want to thank you for listening to me tonight. I know that I did many things that were wrong, but in the context of history, you can see how the events took place. I mistreated and hurt many people, but I did it at the behest of the king and queen, and I did what I thought they expected of me. It is true that much of what I did hurt many, but I did open a new world. I showed the world that there was so much more than what they understood. The long-term effect of what I did is the creation of all the countries in North and South America. I know that that is little solace to many, but it is the way it was. So thank you for allowing me to come through tonight. I appreciate the opportunity, and I hope I was able to clarify a few things for you. Goodbye.
You did, and we thank you for that.
Okay. Thank you, Christopher. I know I learned a lot through this one tonight. Next week, we're going to investigate what it was like to know Jesus. We're going to speak with four spirits that knew him best: John the Baptist, Peter, Mary Magdalene, and John the disciple. Tell your friends about this special show. It's going to be incredibly interesting. My 10th book, Modern Messages of the Archangels, available for purchase. It's on Amazon. It's on my website, barrystrom.com. I think it's a good book. We channel 20 different archangels, and we have their messages in it. It's a great devotional. If you want a signed copy, you're going to have to go to my website for it. It's barrystrom.com.
Okay, I'd like to thank you all for joining us this evening on Channeling History. For the past 3 years now, we've been trying to bring you the truth about history by speaking to the souls that live the events. It's only by understanding the events of the past that we can prepare for the future. So I would like you all to have a great week. God bless you all.
And I'd like to thank all of you that follow us. I'd love to look over and see you guys in the chat room. I'm sorry my voice isn't better yet. I've had this COVID for 7 weeks now, and it's not an easy journey. But we try to do as much as we can. So all of our shows are available on our YouTube channel in my name, Barry Strom. If you want to download them, you can go to Podomatic.com, search Channeling History. I hope you enjoyed the show tonight. I know I did. There was so much I didn't know about the life of Christopher Columbus. We try to bring you history from those that live it. We've been doing this now for over 3 years, if you can believe it. So thank you for listening. Please join us Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Para-X Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to Channeling History. Tune in again next week for another electrifying episode, as we never know who will make an appearance or who will come through the portal. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2020. Our story begins by Kevin MacLeod, licensed through Incompetech.com.